And welcome to the SBK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name's Charles Story. I'll be your host the next 15 minutes. We're coming live from the City of London, Shoreditch. So let's get down to business. May I just say the event last night was rocking. Big thank you to everyone that came down. We couldn't have done it without you. The vibe was electric. The venue was absolutely magnificent. The speakers, I want to give a big shout out to Laurie Kehoe, Managing Director of Consensus, and give a big shout out to Patrick Lowry from Iconic Labs, Christoph from Iovo, and also Jack from Switchio. Big thank you to the speakers. You really made the event what it was. We're going to do it again. We're going to do it even bigger. So let's roll this on. Let's make it happen. And we're really excited to do that. Today's episode or today's podcast is going to have a slightly different format. Myself, Shane, the co-founder of SVK Crypto, and Oliver, our in-house blockchain analyst. Well, he's known as Young Oliver in the office. We have been at UBS. We've been at the UBS HQ here in London. We were invited up to a panel. And part of the rules with the panel, because it was an internal panel with just staff members and SVK, you weren't allowed to record. So the audio recording ahead is a little bit of a sneaky thing that I've managed to do, but I wanted to bring back some of their comments to you guys. So let's get to the audio. Let me know your thoughts.
So hi everyone, I'm Nitch. I'm a second year graduate in technology and I'll be your host this evening. So I'm delighted to introduce you our panel. So Linda Deamy from Globecoin, she's CFO. We have Shane Kehoe from SVK Crypto. We have Paul Donovan, UBS Global Chief Economist. And we have Pete Stevens, Head of UK Innovation. So before we begin, please could you very briefly explain what you do, or what your company does? And Pete, can we start with you?
Yeah, sure. Hi everybody, my name is Pete Stevens. So I run UBS's research and development team into blockchain, distributed ledger technology, and general technology innovation. Based out at Level 39 in Canary Wharf. Been with UBS for more years than I can remember, actually, about 14 years now. We've been around the world, in Asia, London, around Europe, now back in London again.
So I'm Paul Donovan. I'm the Chief Economist for UBS Wealth Management. I joined the bank as a graduate 26 years ago. This is what your future looks like. Be afraid. So my job is, as an economist, looking at issues of currency, looking at issues of inflation, and as part of the bank's Global Investment Committee, making investment recommendations for our clients.
I think I've got a link. Yeah. Thank you very much. My name is Shane Kehoe. I'm the co-founder of SVK Crypto. SVK Crypto is a firm and fund based here in the City of London. We focus on very early stage blockchain technology and the most liquid cryptocurrencies. Before I set up SVK Crypto, I was actually a client of UBS's. I worked for a hedge fund called Blue Crest Capital Management. I was a portfolio manager around the equity capital markets desk, and I was the youngest managing partner of the firm. I'm glad to say that I have left the dark side of finance behind me and fully focused on cryptocurrency, so much to the stage that it's almost a healthy addiction. It's 24/7, 365. It's super exciting, and I love it to the core. Recently, SVK Crypto has just had an investment in its new fund. Its new fund is called Cryptagon EOS. For the cryptocurrency nuts in the room, you'll all know what EOS is. They're backed by Block One, and Block One, in partnership with SVK Crypto, have just launched a $50 million fund. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Linda Leaney. I am CFO at Globecoin. I am a combination, I suppose, of the three people who've just sat here. I am the living proof that you can spend 17 years at UBS on the FX floor and come out of it looking okay. I did, though, then, after that, have to take a two-year career break to actually get myself back together. And since then, I've spent 2 years in the cryptocurrency world because I thought, how can I take the skills of traditional finance and traditional currency. I might as well take those and put them into a digital currency field. I'm working with one ex-colleague and one ex-client. So one of the messages I would have to everyone in sales and trading sitting here is always be nice to your clients. You don't know which one is going to offer you a job in the future.
Thank you. Bob. So let's begin. So Pete, for those that may be unaware, please could you provide a brief overview of what cryptocurrencies are and why there are so many of them?
Right, thanks, Ish. Okay.
Brief.
I can fill the hour, I think. So, I mean, well, one of the reasons you can fill the hour for it is because it's actually a terribly ill-defined term. But if you sort of go back to its origins, really what cryptocurrencies are an open peer-to-peer network that uses cryptographic tokens to act as a medium of exchange. It's all a little bit gobbledygook. It comes from the cypherpunk sort of libertarian cryptographer movement, where they were trying to create electronic cash outside of the world of government control. So as an example, you know, there were multiple other versions that were attempted first, but the first one that really got any traction was Bitcoin, and solved problems that the other versions didn't. And what that's trying to do when it comes down to it, peer-to-peer electronic cash is what it gets tagged as, is two people anywhere in the world who do not know or necessarily trust each other are able to exchange value without the need for any intermediary and without being able to be censored by any government or regulator. So whether it's achieved that is something we can debate later on, but that's what it was aiming to try and achieve. Then we have something like Ethereum, which comes along and builds on top of that, which takes the same concepts and instead creates a sort of decentralized, censorship-resistant compute form of ability to perform computation in a global context without any censorship, which is powered by a cryptocurrency called Ether. Now, it's an interesting point is why there are so many of them, because it's quite trivial to create a new one. In fact, you can create a new one so simply because the code behind something like Bitcoin is open source and available to all. You can take that, change it slightly, and launch a new version, and nobody can stop you. What is incredibly difficult is to get adoption, and you can see that in the valuations of the cryptocurrencies that we've got. It depends on how you count them, but there's more than 2,000, probably, if you count them that way, cryptocurrencies in existence now. However, 80% of all of their valuation is held by the top 10. And in fact, more extremely, over half of the valuation of all cryptocurrencies in the world is held by the top two, Ethereum and Bitcoin. And so that sort of illustrates the fact that whilst they're very easy to create, they're quite hard to make do anything. So I'm sure we can get into it a little bit more in depth with the panel, but I think that's probably a sort of primer to start. Is that enough, you did?
Yeah,
that's fine. Can I add a little bit? So one word that gets bandied around a lot as well is altcoins. So altcoins is the kind of group of cryptocurrencies which aren't the main ones. So they're seen as the alternatives. And as has rightly been pointed out, at the moment, the market cap of those is incredibly small. But to put it into perspective, a lot of these ICOs and cryptocurrencies have been launched in the past 18 months, and especially in the past 6 months. So a lot of them are still almost in a project stage. They're getting out their product, but a lot of them don't have something super tangible to actually offer at the moment.
So I think that leads kind of nicely onto my next question, which is, how do your companies view the crypto market, and where do you fit in into this market?
I view the current cryptocurrency marketplace or space as one word: opportunity, massive opportunity. But with that opportunity comes risk and high reward. Just to put some numbers on it to confirm what you were talking about. You're absolutely right. 2017, we really saw the adoption of the second crowdfunding, V2, the ICO market, the initial coin offerings. There was 902 ICOs in 2017. 42% of those are trading below issuer, of no liquidity. That's quite scary when you look at just how much FOMO was created in that. However, at SVK Crypto, we deploy capital into the space, but we do it as almost looking at it from an equity, because that's our background. However, to agree with your point, there is no DCF. There is no price to earnings ratio. There is no earnings. It really is venture capital right back to the early stages of walking into when Google was sketching out their algorithm on the board. And for me, that's okay. I like risk. I can manage risk and I can tolerate risk. I think what we're after seeing is a power shift from the opportunity of venture capital, which was only for the given. It was only for the chosen few. It was only for the rich and famous that were on the west coast of the US. That's now shifting. And with regards to the current ICO market, anybody with a laptop and some time can invest. You can do your own due diligence. You can do your own research. You can make your own decisions. And coming back to a little bit what my good colleague said on my left-hand side, was that it is open for anybody. It's between peer to peer. There is no central equity capital markets investment bankers looking at valuation and doing the deal. They are being removed. And that's quite concerning for a bank like UBS. It's quite concerning when you start to see EOS, which has just raised $5.1 billion, which is the largest capital raise in the last 12 months. They did it without an investment bank. So it's quite interesting to see how this is evolving and changing. Sure, there's a lot of bad actors. I'm sure there's a lot of risks. But I think that one just has to be mindful of what's currently happening in the space and the amount of money that's being involved. And it is for everybody. It's not just for the chosen few.
Right, so there we've got the fund manager. So I am, if you like, the product. I have done an ICO. We launched our ICO earlier this year, so that's an initial coin offering. So that's where we offered anyone in the world, with a few exceptions by jurisdiction, can come and buy our coin.
Was it US? Did you offer
we, no, we've only done, no, we haven't actually, no. We haven't. We didn't want to raise $5 billion or a large amount of money. We wanted to raise about $3 million, which we did. But this is the first time me and two other people have ever raised $3 million in the space of 4 months, pretty much by ourselves with a small group, probably about 15 of helpers, advisors around the world. And that felt very liberating, very exciting. But we did it because we are firmly have a very firm belief in the product we've got. So it has been very exciting. There are a lot of ICOs. Anyone can invest, and this is the problem sometimes. What's been a real eye-opener for me is because people can invest. Say anyone in the UK can invest. That means your mom can invest, your younger brother could invest, your next door neighbor could invest, or a large hedge fund like Shane could invest. So I've moved from only dealing with institutional customers to the deep joy of also having retail customers who will ask at midnight on Friday on our Telegram channel some complicated question about why they can't see their tokens in their wallet. And that's my job to actually reply to them. So in some ways, having your own business is great, but it does involve a lot of skills that you didn't know sometimes that you had, and it does involve actually having a product that you really believe in and that you've really thought through. And so one of the key aspects of any ICO is what's called white paper. So that is basically where they are setting out what their vision is, what product they're going to develop, how they're going to do it, and how they're going to make money out of it. So anyone looking at an ICO has to read the white paper in depth, but take into account some of it could be waffle, a lot of it could be rewritten by someone else, a lot of it could be completely false. And so it's very difficult for those of us with true products, either as an ICO or as a fund manager, to differentiate ourselves from scams, from the number of just worthless products that are out there. At the moment, it's a great big market where some of the things are great. Some of the things are great but haven't been thought through, and some of them are pure scams. And that's the aspect that gets the headlines. And unfortunately, it is true. So anyone looking to invest has to be very aware of that.
So does that beg the question that maybe the financial services involved, is this a missed opportunity for likes of us? Yes.
Well, this is one thing I found, and you probably agree, moving from a very regulated environment to a completely unregulated environment is, I find, very scary. I would like a level of regulation, and it's something that I campaign about with a group of other people actually around the world. We deliberately launched our ICO out of Switzerland, basically because we're very familiar with FINMA, and FINMA have very good guidelines on the cryptocurrency industry. They've come out with, if you like, not a light touch and not heavy regulation, but a medium line that just seems to fit everyone nicely, protect to a certain extent investors, and give great clarity to the market. But there are a lot of countries who are still debating what to do on regulations. There are some countries that have deliberately lax regulations, and there is basically the elephant in the room, which is the SEC. Until the US decide what they are going to do with regulation, the whole industry, to a certain extent, is stuck.
So I think there's a couple of things here. This, back to that definition of the cryptocurrency, we've shown quite how these things are ill-defined anyway. So actually, cryptocurrency itself has nothing to do with ICOs apart from being the payment mechanism. So what we're talking about is tokens. I would not class as a cryptocurrency as such. A cryptocurrency is something that is issued by an algorithm and is acting as electronic cash. These are the tokens that are coming, which are acting either as utility or security, depending on the ill-defined framework around these, are not what I would call cryptocurrencies. They live on other networks. The way you can differentiate them quite clearly is there a network that manages these tokens, that is dedicated to these tokens, such as Bitcoin has a network and is dedicated to Bitcoin tokens, Ethereum is a network which is dedicated to Ether, or are you a token living on top of one of those networks and is using that to power it? So most of the ICOs that have been done over the last year or so have been done on the Ethereum network, not all, but most, and they're powered by Ether and they're tokens on top of that. They are not cryptocurrencies. They're in the crypto world, but they are not cryptocurrencies. But I don't want to get deep into that, but it's just worth noticing there's those different sort of things. So these tokens are trying to do something different. What's the regulation side of things? Apart from China, nobody has issued any regulations in this space. There are some guidances coming out. There's a lot of people saying we don't need any new regulations because this is just tech, and what you do with the tech, you're bound to the laws that already exist. So if you fleece somebody, I can still put you in jail. You know, if it's a security, it's liable to security laws. If it's not, the big problem we've got is down to this point of what is a cryptocurrency, what is a token. Nobody's quite got their head around. Even the industry itself, the crypto industry, doesn't necessarily agree on what these things are. And the regulators are coming to try and catch up, and they don't necessarily agree either.
The regulator was asleep at the wheel.
They are, well, they're also being a little careful. You know, they are retrospective bodies, deliberately. You know, they're not supposed to get out in front of stuff. That's not how they operate. They try to sort of come and make sure the place is a safe place, and they actually are probably more knowledgeable. And you talk about the SEC, I think they probably know a lot more than they are actually letting go out there. You know, there's enforcement coming, quite clearly, and this takes time. It takes months, 6 months, sometimes 18 months, and it will come. And so I think a lot of people will get a bit of a nasty shock. But they're also, you know, not all the regulators have the same mandate. The FCA has a competition mandate, tries to promote innovation, not all regulators do. But they don't want to be seen to be stifling something. So they're desperate to stop fraud and fleecing, but they also don't want to stop the next wave of technology innovation. So they're caught in a, I wouldn't want to be one,
yeah,
frankly.
Yeah,
so China is the only one that has come out with strict regulation. They banned ICOs, and that may be getting reversed. And they frankly went and said, enough's enough, banned.
Well, you've been very vocal in the press and on US as well. What do you make of this? What do you make of cryptocurrencies and the mania that we saw in 2017 with massive price rises and seemingly everyone looking to invest?
Well, our clients aren't looking to invest. That is clear. There is zero interest now. There was interest 6 months ago.
Is one of your clients Brandon Howard?
No.
I'm not so sure about that.
No, they're not. No, as in, sorry, wealth management. So the the issue that I have is not with what we have on the token side. The issue is Bitcoin going to be a currency in the legal world? No, it will never be a currency in the legal world. If it is, UBS makes a killing, because Bitcoin is inherently unstable in terms of its value. All currencies are worthless. Gold is worthless. Any currency is worthless. It's only worth what somebody else will exchange it for in terms of goods and or services. And the value of anything in terms of other things is determined by supply and demand. So the inherent problem that we have with the cryptocurrencies is they're built on, they're sort of built on the concept of the monetarists of the early 1980s, or they're built on a false idea about the gold standard. Most people who talk about Bitcoin as the new gold don't realize that the gold standard never existed in the sense that they're talking about it. And the fallacy is that if you don't control supply, you get inflation. The problem with that is that that's completely untrue. Printing money has never, ever, ever in human history created inflation. Never once has printing money created inflation. Printing too much money creates inflation. And that is a rather important distinction, because how much is too much? It's too much if money supply exceeds money demand. And money demand, contrary to the ideas of the monetarist Patrick Linford and so on, is not stable. Monetary demand, as the last 10 years has demonstrated extraordinarily well, is highly volatile. What we can say with a reasonable degree of conviction is that over the course of the next 50 to 100 years, money demand will go down. Why? Because the world population will go down. As we get a decline in the global population, you get a decline in economic activity. If you have less economic activity, you use less money, basically. So essentially, the problem that we have with cryptocurrencies is you cannot reduce their supply. You can increase their supply, you can hold it constant, but you can't vary their supply as demand varies. Now again, if you look at what fiat currency has done over the last 10 years, we get a surge in cash supply after 2008 because we have a crisis of cash. And what is now happening is cash supply is being reduced. The Fed is literally burning $30 billion every month. And by the end of this year, we'll be burning $50 billion a month, because companies like Apple are saying, we've got $100 billion of cash on the balance sheet we don't need anymore, we're getting rid of the cash. Well, if Apple get rid of the cash, somebody's got to absorb it. Either it goes into the market and creates inflation, or the Fed takes it in and burns it, and that's what they're doing. Nonetheless, I do think cryptocurrencies will still play a role, and that comes in part because of the regulation of the financial system, and it comes in because of the role of the black economy, and so on. Whenever you create a situation where supply of money to certain markets is constrained, you end up with the market creating its own solution and coming up with a substitute to the legal tender or the official currency or whatever you want to call it. We saw this in 10th century Venice. Venice at that time was on a silver standard. Europe has nearly always been on a silver standard. And it used silver coin. It was quite a pure silver standard. And they ran out of silver coin because no silver coin had been minted in Europe since the Roman Empire collapsed. And so as the Venetian economy explodes, they run out of money. And there's not enough money to do day-to-day transactions, so they invent it. It's called mobilia, which basically is people say, right, that book is worth 10 ducats, and doesn't matter what's really worth, everybody pretends it's worth 10 ducats and it's used as exchange. You couldn't pay your taxes in a mobilia, and lots of people refused to accept it, but a certain part of society accepted it for day-to-day transactions. 1945, in Germany, West Germany, the Reichsmark collapses. Again, there's hyperinflation in Germany, again, so the local currency is completely worthless. You have the French franc, which also rapidly becomes completely worthless. Pounds sterling and dollars, but there aren't enough sterling and dollars to support the economy. So what you do, you use cigarettes. Cigarettes for about 2 years are the currency of day-to-day small-time transactions because you can't have enough cash into the system. So I think that there may be a role for cryptocurrencies in parts of the economy which cannot get their hands on regulated legitimate money. Now that is obviously the illegal economy, it may expand beyond that, but if you can't get your hands on legitimate cash because the Know Your Client regulation, the 20 hours of compliance videos I have to sit through every month are stopping that money going into parts of the economy, that's where I think cryptocurrencies will play a role. Now I fully accept tokens are a different issue, they are more likely to be related to assets, but the concept of a cryptocurrency is one which is not going to be a stable store of value, I think.
Interesting, I think is one word I'd use to describe the guys there. I think that they were trying to pretend they were too good for crypto in some ways, even though UBS has a crypto division. Some of the guys there have a crypto, have a business card, and their job title, their department is crypto 2.0. So that's pretty interesting. I think that everyone at UBS, I mean, everyone I spoke to and met, they were so sharp. They were so on it, but they knew nothing about blockchain. They knew nothing about the space, apart from two guys. I'm not going to mention their names for their sake. But they were really, really smart, and they were worked in their blockchain lab, and they were really, really smart, and they were really on the ball. But everyone else was smart, but they kind of knew a little bit about crypto. They heard about Bitcoin, the gateway drug, but other than that, they hadn't a Scooby, as we'd say, a Scooby-Doo or a clue. So that was interesting, and I mean, we rocked in. I wore a hoodie. Oliver wore a T-shirt. And Shane wore the SVK crypto t-shirt as well. So we didn't really fit in there too well with everyone else wearing suits. We definitely stuck out like a sore thumb. But we really, really want to thank UBS for inviting us down. We look forward to going again. But I think it was really interesting from our perspective to hear what the institutions are thinking, what they're saying, because we really believe for this space to really go to the next level, we really need their money to start pouring into the space. And for that to happen, what do we need? We need custody. We need built out custody solutions. We need built out ETFs, which is currently happening. So we're getting there. We're getting there day by day. We're moving closer towards that. But it's interesting to see that they're focused on this, even though they don't say it publicly, and even though they don't even say it publicly in their own internal staff open panel discussion. But we know they're on it, and you can just tell by the way they were speaking tonight. So I want to give a big shout out to those guys. Thank you so much for listening. That's a wrap. I got to bounce. Remember, as always, join our Telegram group. It's the community Telegram group. It's going off. If you're not in there, I don't know what you're doing. It's SVK Space Crowd. If you type that into Telegram, you'll find us. Hit us up in there. It's active. It's been growing day by day, and we're really, really happy about how everything is going on Telegram. Really happy with the content that's going, the discussions that are going down. So it's great to have all of those within our community Telegram. We'll also check us out on Twitter at SVK_crypto. And also check out our YouTube videos. You can check that out, www.youtube.com/SVK crypto. And if you're really on your game, you can email me directly, cstory, C-S-T-O-R-R-Y, at svkcrypto.com. That's a wrap. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to an SVK Crypto Podcast original. Follow us on Twitter at SVK_crypto. Email us on cstory@svkcrypto.com. Leave us a message on our website, www.svkcrypto.com.